So we're back into our final couple studies here in the Samson Syndrome. Tonight will be part 7. Next week will be the final one, part 8. We've gone through 6 of them so far. We've talked about strong men tend to disregard boundaries. Strong men tend to ignore good advice. They tend to break the rules, overestimate their cleverness, repeat the same mistakes, have big egos. And tonight we're going to talk about taking foolish risks. Next week will be the final one. We're going to talk about they neglect to see the bigger picture. And after next week, we're going to start a study. I've had a number of folks ask us about different denominations and where different ones came from and why they believe, what they believe, and so forth. So I thought I'd do a small study about bringing together some of the different denominations and where they had come from, where they had split off on, what their beliefs are, and to show you kind of where some of these stand today. It's hard because a lot of them are very... Years ago, you knew exactly what, just by the denomination, what they believed, dress right, dress. But today, even though that denomination may believe that, some variations of the doctrine are a little different, so you can't quite be so dogmatic. But we're going to go through some of them because there's a lot of issues that come down the line and why some of these believe the way they did and what they come out of and all that different stuff. So we'll get into some of that. Hopefully that'll be a good answer. And then we'll go into what we believe because we don't believe a lot of the way some of these other denominations believe. So hopefully you understand what we believe and know based off our Constitution and what the Bible says. All right, so let's get into it tonight. Taking foolish risks. Evel Knievel said this. He said, if I miss this jump and I hit the wall head on, I'm just going to go somewhere quicker where you all are going someday as well. And I'm going to sit there and have a beer and I'll wait for y'all. Not exactly what you're going to look at, but speaking of Evel Knievel, Solomon says in Proverbs 10:21, fools die for lack of sense. He made a lot of foolish mistakes. That man on September 8th, 1974, I was just a little one-year-old, he attempted to, in a sky cycle, jump over the Snake River Canyon in Idaho. And there were two prototypes that he had launched. They failed. And so he was still going to go through with it. They're like, everybody told him, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. His wife even said, don't do it. I'm not even going to show up. Don't do it. So it was funny because I was watching the little video of this and watch it go. And here come the priests and give him his last rites and everything. I'm like, wow, everybody's expecting this guy to die. And they're like, don't do it. And he's like, he waves them off. I'm like, I'm doing it. I'm like, that's a pretty foolish risk. The one guy who was supposed to be the safety director said that the wind was blowing back against him too hard. You're not going to get over it, even if you do get up to speed. He was supposed to get up to 300 mile per hour. I think it only was at 280 or 260 something, 68, or I forget. But it didn't last. So anyway, he takes off, and it's just like... Everybody just standing there like in shock because they're like, just cancel this whole thing. And he didn't do it. So as soon as he jumped the ramp and as he was on his way over, something happened and the chute pulled automatically. And it stopped him from even making progress. And so as the rocket began to start to drift down, the wind pushed him back. And he actually landed on dry ground, and they're talking about if he would have landed in any part of that Snake River, he would have drowned because they wouldn't have been able to get him out as quick. And so they blew him back, he landed on dry ground, saved his life, and he never attempted that one again. So, excuse me, when you talk about stretching the limits when things aren't quite good judgments, we probably shouldn't take foolish risks. And when we talk about something like that, just like Evel Knievel, Samson was no different. So if you got your Bible, open to Judges chapter 16. Judges chapter 16. Samson makes some bad judgments. And in Judges 16, he had just come out of the marriage with the woman from Timnah. And so all the men tried to get him in a trap, and then he owed them the 30 pieces of clothing and all the stuff. And then they got mad, and he used the foxes' tails and burnt down all their crops. And so then they burnt his father-in-law's house with his wife in it. And, you know, the story, and you're like, man, maybe you could learn from that. But he didn't. And so in Judges chapter 16, verse 1, it says, Samson went down to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute. And it's like, buddy, what? That's just foolish right there. And he went into her, and the Gazites were told, Samson has come here, and they surrounded the place, and they set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, let us wait till the light of the morning, and then we'll just kill him. But Samson lay till midnight, and at midnight, he arose, took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts, pulled them up, bar and all, and put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that's in front of Hebron. And so it raises the question this, why would he wake up at midnight? I don't know. Reading that just gives me all kinds of questions. So they come to kill him, so they're trying to be quiet. They're waiting at the gate, and they know that he's there. So why does he wake up at midnight? But Samson lay till midnight. I don't know, maybe he was just laying there. Maybe he wasn't asleep. Doesn't say he was actually sleeping. He was just laying down till midnight.
Mine says lay low. Lay low.
He laid low? Huh. Was that King James?
New
King James? Okay. You got the King James, Susie? What does it say? Same thing? Verse, what is that one?
Three.
Laid till midnight.
So
at midnight he gets up. I don't know if he's just laying there, like knowing these guys are out there, or something wakes him up at midnight. Like I talk about the military days where he used to get us up at 4:30. I'm up at 4:30 all the time every day now. Like, what in the heck? Let me sleep. Don't. And then the dog's like, oh, you're up? Well, I got to go out then while you're up. Come on, go back to bed. Anyway. Did the prostitute say something that rose his suspicion? That's what kind of make me question something. Did she say something that, you know, hey, why don't you stay here all night? Nothing's going to happen to you. Oh, why would you say that? That's kind of odd. I mean, but who knows? But anyway, maybe he heard the men trying to gather by the gate. I don't know. But I'm sure that we can all agree that some risk-taking is good. I mean, we should take some risks, right? We take risks in our military to defend the freedom of America, right? We talk about grace and so forth. Yes, sir. Say that again.
Okay, it said they compassed him in and laid wait for him. So what's the word compassed?
Encompassed. Surrounded. Encompassed. They surrounded.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah, they encompassed, they surrounded him.
Okay.
They were waiting to take him from every angle so he wouldn't be able to escape.
But he must have known
him. Yeah, I would say, but I don't know how he would have known. But anyway, he escaped. How'd he get away from them? They were out there by the gate of the city, and he just ripped it up and took it out. Were they sleeping too? Maybe they fell asleep. I don't know. Maybe he waited for them to fall asleep, and that's why he did it at midnight. It's just, I don't know. When I read the Bible and I answer a question I'm looking for, then it raises 50 other questions. And sometimes you'll never get the answer. But when we're talking about taking risks, not like Evel Knievel or Samson, but there are some that are necessary risks. We say like, military. These are good risks. Military. Military, we are to defend the freedom of America against any enemy, foreign or domestic. Firefighters, they take risks going into houses that are on fire and trying to rescue people and so forth. They take risks every day. I was having lunch with a firefighter that they had come in because they were 1 month, they were doing religious organizations just to see the layout of a building in case they have to come here. They want to make sure that they're prepared. And so a couple of the local ones that are close here, they come in, and there's about 25 guys, and I'm walking them through, you know, showing them where things are. So if they ever have to come in here and it's smoky, they have some type of remembrance of what this place looked like. And it was an old friend that I went to high school with. And it was a beautiful reunion, and he invited me to lunch, and we went to lunch, and it was awesome. He got saved, his wife saved, he goes to Berean, and just, we talk about a beautiful story, you know, of catching up and everything. But he had talked about some folks that we went to school with. He had to Narcan them so many times, and they kept going back and going back. And he said, eventually, I found him, and it was too late. There was nothing we could do. And this was three or four of the guys that we went to school with. I'm like, man, could you imagine that? There's risks in everything that we do. Cops take risks trying to keep criminals off the streets. Risk takers invest new ideas. They spend money that could be life-changing advances, especially in science and technology. But I think we'd agree that there are some risks that are okay. There are some good risks that we should take, not like foolish risks. And there are occasions that you can take, some you have to take over your health, over your reputation, your job, your marriage. And there's other habits that you're going to play with fire. Solomon said in Proverbs 6, 27, 28, can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burnt? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? Think about Evel Knievel. Over the course of his career, he broke over 50 bones in his body. He had over 14 surgeries to repair, replace, or put steel rods, screws, plates, pins, you name it, into that man's body. Some of those bones he broke more than five times of the same bone. So I'm like, man, you break one bone, I ain't doing that again. You take foolish risks, you're going to have consequences, right? Just like you can't play with fire and not get burnt, there are four risks that there's just four types of risks. Let me give you those. Number one is an unavoidable risk. An unavoidable risk. There was an NHL hockey game in Columbus, Ohio. A 13-year-old girl was watching the game, and I guess hockey is much funner to be there. I've never been to an actual guy. I'd probably want to go because I ain't going to watch it on TV. That's like worse than golf. So they were watching this hockey game, and a guy hit a slap shot, shot out of the rink, and went up into the stands, hit one of the patrons up there, bounced off him, and two rows back hit a 13-year-old girl in the temple. And 48 hours later, she was dead because of the injuries. And there's nothing you could do about that. What are you going to do to prevent that? That's not a risk you're going to be able to prevent. I mean, yeah, you can not go, but, I mean, life would be boring if you stayed in your house. I mean, a lot of people have the fear of going outside, and, yeah, it's miserable on them. But some risks are just, you know, I'm standing here preaching. This thing was built in 1957. How do I know that thing isn't going to fall on me? I'm taking a risk. I mean, some risks are unavoidable. But the simple truth is all of life has risks. You walk across the street, taking a boat ride. You're flying in an airplane. You invest money into the stock market. Swallowing a pill. How do I know what that pill is? You know, we talk about faith, and people are like, oh, we live by science. Oh, no, you don't. You live by faith, No, I don't. I make sure I have evidence. No, you don't. Because when you open a pill bottle and you take one of those pills, you have faith that that is what it says it is. Right? You don't scientifically verify every pill that you take is exactly what it says you're taking. You just have faith and you just take it. I mean, there's risks we take all the time. Riding in a car, eating at a restaurant, going to a hockey game. I don't even know if I want to go to a hockey game now. No, I do, because I want to see the fights. I'm sorry, if you're dumb enough to fight during a game, I'm dumb enough to stand there and watch it. I don't know, I'd pay money for it. It's like NASCAR. I love to watch NASCAR. Not for the race, but I want to see the wrecks. I want them to be safe. I want them to be safe. I want to see, anyway, a little masochism in there, but it's all right. Accidents happen and some are unavoidable. There are unavoidable risks. You're going to take some type of unavoidable risk at some point. Number two, necessary risks. Sometimes there are necessary risks that we take. If you, the illustration was given, this gentleman's father needed surgery for his cancer because they said, if you don't have surgery and have this radiation and then this chemo, this cancer will kill you. But then on the other end, he had a bad heart, he had diabetes, and he had kidney and liver problems. And so the surgery and the chemo might affect that and kill him. Okay, so here's a necessary risk. What do you do? You don't have chemo, you don't have surgery, and you die. Or if you do have chemo and you do have surgery, then these other health risks you have might kill you. Okay, so he had the surgery and he had the chemo and all the stuff, but it was taking a risk because of the other stuff. There are some things that you're going to take a necessary risk. Sometimes all the choices we have are going to have risks with them, and we need to take necessary risks in either decision that we're going to make. So they're going to be necessary, a necessary risk. Number three, calculated risks. A calculated risk differs from the first two, because you can take a second or a third or a fourth option depending on what you calculate. But there's still risk there, but there's something that you're calculating. In the Spanish-American War, Army doctors were studying yellow fever. They were specifically trying to figure out how it was being transmitted. They believed that it was transmitted by mosquitoes. And so the first step was to allow mosquitoes to feed on the people who had yellow fever, and they used guinea pigs. So they took the mosquitoes from the people that had been infected, and then they put the mosquitoes onto the guinea pigs, and the guinea pigs actually got infected. But the result didn't mean for humans, because they weren't sure if the guinea pigs and the mosquitoes and all the stuff. So the next step was to have a human human guinea pig. So what they did is they said, well, who are we going to have? So the doctors actually decided that they would let the mosquitoes, after they had been infected by somebody with yellow fever, feed on the doctors. And they found out that, yes, all the doctors got yellow fever. So they did find out, number one, that the mosquitoes were transferring the yellow fever from the affected to the unaffected and giving it to them. So it was the mosquitoes' fault. Okay, that was calculated risk. Now they were trying to figure out if they could spread it by just coming in close contact with somebody, by their clothes or just being around them or something of that nature. So then another set of doctors took a calculated risk. And they went into homes of people that were infected, slept in their beds, wore their clothes, everything, hung around them, hugged on them, everything, touched them, I don't think that they had any sores or anything that they were open, but none of those doctors got infected. So here, and it's just one of those things that you have. It's not foolish. I think it'd be more brave than anything. This is a calculated risk that the doctors took. They took a calculated risk, And now the evidence shows that they figured out that mosquitoes were the ones transferring it. And secondly, you couldn't get it by coming in close contact or touching somebody or their clothes. So that was a good calculated risk. And so they took a risk for the greater good of mankind. Sometimes you got to calculate some of that stuff. And that's what they do with military. Military is a calculated risk, especially when you're going to war. Matter of fact, Jesus even says this. What king going out to encounter another king in war will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet this other king that's got 20,000? Are you going to be able to do that? And so that's where you have wars, because you have some, like Napoleon at Waterloo, didn't have enough troops, but he thought he was going to be smarter than the Prussian and England and all that, and they outnumbered him and they overtook him. The one factor he didn't factor in was the weather, and that's what was the downfall. And so he lost. He didn't calculate everything correctly. And so there are going to be calculated risks. And then number four, there's foolish risks. Foolish risks. MSNBC had a story about, it was in the state of Delaware, in an apartment complex. There was a foul smell coming from one of the apartments. And so the neighbors called the cops, and the cops, you know, came to do a health check on him. And they opened the door to see a 45-year-old man laying on the floor, dead, with 8 rattlesnakes and 4 cobras laying over his body. Now, well, of course, his body had been rotting for a while, and so it was not a pretty sight, I imagine. Evidently, he forgot to lock the cage door, or neglected to, or wasn't locked enough, and then when the snakes got out, he didn't realize it, and trying to get up off the couch to run, he wasn't in time because he had so many. And I would say, what kind of a guy brings 8 rattlesnakes to his house and not a puppy? I'm sorry, that's kind of a foolish risk, wouldn't you think? I mean, I've had iguanas and I've had Nile monitors and Nick, oh gosh, that was 20-some years ago. I had Nicodemus, that's what I called him. I hope that sucker's burning in hell. But that guy, he was miserable. So he was like 4.5, almost 5 feet long, man. His head was like this big. Had it big, it was an iguana. It was a blue, it was a green iguana. So he was, not for long. He died mysteriously. I don't know what happened, but he was so mean. His tail was about that big around, and it was like a whip. And you'd have to, you know, like bathe him and stuff and get the loose skin off. You have to put him in the tub and you have to and feed him. Oh, man, he would whip that thing. And, man, it's like, And they were paying attention. You're trying to give him bananas and stuff. And, oh, here you go. He bites your finger, just rip your flesh off. And, Anyway. Yeah, I don't know what happened. Shortly after I got in touch with Emily, you know, and we started dating, and, you know, he died mysteriously. but that's not something that's going to kill you. I mean, we had all kinds of stuff. We had a half-reticulated, half-tiger python that me and my buddy had, and he was blind, so we actually had to kill the mice because he couldn't catch him, and so then we had to feed him. And sometimes you get caught, but those are foolish risks, but not that foolish. They're not deadly foolish risks. I mean, come on, you don't want to do something that's literally going to kill you. But foolish risks are holding your golf clubs up during the middle of a lightning storm while you're golfing. I mean, why are you still on the golf course? that's kind of dumb. Or why would you cross a raging river in the wintertime with only a quarter inch of ice on top of it? You're probably going to fall under there. It's just, Some risks are just dumb foolish. And that's what we're talking about. Samson sinned with three women. The first one with Timnah, second one with the prostitute, and then, of course, with Delilah. And it's interesting that after the first one, it was never about marriage again. Now, I don't know if Delilah was a prostitute. We assume, because the Bible doesn't say, but we assume in that area, since he visited a prostitute, he was just using women for sex. And so when he went into Delilah, same thing. The soldiers knew what was going on. He knew they knew where he was going to. And so they were just trying to capture him. But he took a foolish risk. How do I want to say this? Here's something to think about. A foolish risk is still a foolish risk, even if you don't get caught. Right? Or hurt, yeah. A foolish risk is still a foolish risk, even if you don't get caught or hurt. Yeah, that's a good addition. And so when we talk about risks, there ought to be six questions that could save your life. I'm going to save your life right here. Number one, are the rewards worth as much as the consequences might cost you? Are the rewards worth as much as the consequences might cost you? You know, he just wanted to sleep with women, and it cost him his life. Is it worth it? And that even goes for people today. There was a, speaking in NASCAR, I forget the gentleman's name, died of AIDS. He was an upcoming rising NASCAR back in the, it was in the 80s. And he, but. Is that, yes, yes, thank you. Loved women. Loved women. And so I think he got it in a card. They left him a card in the motel room and said, sorry, by the way, we have AIDS. Had AIDS. Lost his career. He was a young guy. I forget how young he was, but he's 30-something, I think. In his 30s. Calculated risk. Did they, when they get, well, yeah, what am I asking you guys for? Do they still make you do a blood test when you get married? Yeah, we didn't have to, did we? When did they stop doing that? That was a good thing to know. I mean, that's not that long ago, but yeah, that's cool. It's good to know. But we talk about risks. Are the rewards worth as much as the consequences might cost you? There's a lot of people that love to go to Spain and do the running of the bulls. I like watching that from the comfort of my own home. I'm not going to watch the bulls. and I'm sorry, there's been too many deaths of people that what's it going to cost you? These people trip and fall, and the bulls just literally impale them with their horns, and they die, or they bleed out. It's like, man, that's a foolish risk that you shouldn't take, because the consequences are not worth what it's going to cost. The rewards. I mean, to say you ran with the bulls and you're okay, that's not something I want on my wall. But some people it is. Oh, yeah. They do it. Now, this is what they say. Why would anybody want to jump out of a perfectly good airplane? And I say, because I have a perfectly good parachute on my back. And the scariest one was the last one. Because all the other ones I survived. But I survived that one too. Number two, have I fully researched this risk? have I taken every opportunity to make sure that I have all the information about the risks about what I'm supposed to do? There's an old Indian proverb that said this: don't ever test the depth of a river with both feet. Solomon says this in Proverbs 2, 3, and 4. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasure. Solomon says, make sure, just like gold and silver and money and investments, you want that stuff, make sure you seek out understanding like that. Because you need to understand what this risk is all about. Make sure you do your research. Number three, what has happened to other people who have taken the same risk? This is good for a lot of things. I mean, this is just great, good, sound, wise advice. Ecclesiastes 1:9, Solomon says, what has been, that's what's going to be. And what has been done before has already been done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Everything that is happening now has already happened, and everything that happened before is going to happen again. There's nothing new under the sun. So when you talk about taking a risk, how did it affect other people? That's where Paul said, 1 Corinthians 10, Paul says that all this stuff, all this Old Testament stuff was written down for Israel for our learning, so that we understand, don't do the same mistakes. All this stuff was written down for us. Number four, what is my motivation for taking these risks? Running with the bulls, why do you want to do it? Just so you can say, I did it? Hey, I did it. I'd rather lie and say I did it than actually go do it, because I may not come back from it. But jumping out of an airplane, totally different. Got a perfectly good chute. And I had a reserve in the front. That's twice the safety right there. I don't know about the needs, though. That was a little rough. I'd still do it again. I still would. It was fun. In 2 Samuel 23, we see David's hiding out in a cave. And he wanted some water from a well in Bethlehem, which I think they were, I don't know, they were a few miles away, and I forget the whole story, but the Philistines were surrounding them, and it was almost impossible for them to leave the cave. And just like people think out loud sometimes, and they just kind of, you know, say stuff, and they're like, oh, I'm just thinking out loud. And David says this out loud, oh, man, what I wouldn't give for just some water at the well at Bethlehem. Man, that'd be so refreshing right about now. And so two of the guys that are in the back of the cave, they listen to that. And so what they do is they set out, despite the risk with the Philistines, they set out for Bethlehem, and they go get him some water and bring it back to David. And you're like, wow, that is a foolish risk. But if you understand why they did it because they loved David so much. That's something to think about. Are you the type of character and the person that somebody would take a foolish risk to do something for you? What's that? Yeah, I know. And that's when you just throat punch him because you did all that work for nothing. But anyway. What? But they did it because they loved David. That was the whole principle. And so what is the motivation for taking that risk? Is it worth it? Number five, what will my life be like if I don't take this risk? Now, this is one that was kind of hard. A guy named Rob Hall in the, I believe it was 90s, late 90s, he was a mountain climber, and he was doing an expedition on Mount Everest. And the temperatures dropped to minus 140. A big storm blew in. Man, it was like a whiteout. It was blowing like sideways. And so they're up on Mount Everest, and the air oxygen is real thin. And so Doug Hansen, he was a novice climber. And he was suffering from the effects of frostbite, and they were trying to get back to camp. And then he became numb, and he was so tired he couldn't go on. And so at that moment, Rob had to make a decision of what he was going to do. Could he go? He could make it back to camp and save his own life, or was he going to stay with Doug and try to help him. And so the mindset was this, and they always go back to it, his wife goes back to it, where his expeditions were this: I don't leave your side until I bring you down the mountain. And so what happened was, is that was his mindset. I will not leave you until I bring you back down this mountain. And so what he did is he did not leave Doug's side. And the next morning, both of them were froze to death. And so actually, if I recall the story correctly, his body is still up on Mount Everest. His wife said, leave him up there because that's what he would want. And so his body is still up on Mount Everest to this day. And so there's a, I don't know, that's a hard one. But he decided to stay with somebody because that was his motto. I won't leave your side until we're off this mountain. And so he didn't. He was a man of his word. Or he could have been a liar and be portrayed as a coward and save his own life. I mean, what would you do in that situation? Well, you would have taken that dumb risk anyway. That's like getting six rattlesnakes and bring them into your house. I don't think I'd be doing that either. But yeah, the point of this story, I guess, is what they were trying to get across is that sometimes not taking a risk is a bigger risk than taking it. Number six, what does the Bible say about what I'm thinking about doing? And I think sometimes that a lot of people don't go to this one. This is probably the most important. What does the Bible say about it? Or is there a principle found? Is there a verse found? Can I find something? We talk about minefields. Man, people that go through minefields, and there's always like a map of where they're at so you don't blow up. We need the path of which way to go. And that's what God's word is for us. We talk about that in Psalm 119, 105. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. It's a map of where I'm supposed to walk and where I'm not supposed to walk. And so I don't need to get too close to the edges because I might fall. And so life sometimes is like the minefield. We need to stick to the word of God to keep us on the right path. Unfortunately, strong people, they fail to give the word of God any type of attention that it deserves. And so we suffer consequences for our own foolishness. But when assessing risks, make sure it's not foolish. Make sure the reward outweighs the consequences. Make sure you have done your homework. Make sure you research everything you need to. Make sure you know what's happening to what has happened to others that have taken the same risks. And make sure your motivation is pure. Make sure you've looked at all options. And make sure you've consulted the Word of God. Any questions? That's a lot of stuff there. That's good. Sometimes common sense is good information, but sometimes people don't have common sense either. And a lot of the same stuff, that's what Solomon says. These things have happened before, and they're happening now because people don't learn from the past. If you don't learn from the past, you're destined to what? Repeat it.